Hi, my name is Hans Peter Meyer, and I'm the host of the Men's Work Podcast, where you'll find interviews with men and with women. You'll find yoga classes, you'll find reflections, you'll find a lot of material to hopefully help you move through the tests that life has handed you: end of marriage, loss of job, marital relationship stress, fatherhood, just being overwhelmed. It's a lot. So listen, if you need to talk, I've got no charge mini coaching sessions at menswork.ca. Enjoy the show. So we're going to start with a little exercise here. Just be sitting tall, however you're sitting, on the floor or in your chair. Feel your sit bones and your feet connected to the floor, and then feel your spine lifting out of your pelvis. Just tuck your chin a little bit, lift your chest. Got this nice long spine from the base of your spine all the way up to the crown of your head. And we're going to do a short breath exercise. So we'll start on one side and then we'll move to the other, and I'll explain the directions. So right now you're sitting, your eyes are closed, and your eyes are focused on the brow point between your eyes. So what we're trying to do there is stimulate the pituitary gland, but also bring our attention to that part of our frontal lobe. So if you feel a little bit of tugging on the outsides of your eyes, then you know that you're doing it right. Should feel a little bit uncomfortable. And you're going to press your tongue against the roof of your mouth. Not really hard, but just pushing it up there. So that's one of the most direct ways we can stimulate our frontal lobe, is by touching our tongue to the roof of our mouth. You're going to have your left hand open on your knee or in Gyan Mudra. So Gyan Mudra is index finger and thumb tips touching. So you're sitting tall, your eyes are closed, your tongue is pressed to the roof of your mouth gently. Your left hand is open or in Gyan Mudra, sitting on your lap or your knee. And with your right index finger, you're going to close your right nostril. And we're going to breathe in through the right nostril, breathe in and out through the right nostril, but very, very slow, trying to take 15 to 20 seconds with the inhale and the exhale. And on the exhale, we're going to chant ong, so O-N-G. What we're trying to do is create a vibration in our body. So this breath exercise, this meditation, does a number of things, but one of them is that it starts to, on a subtle level, on the level of sound and vibration, starts to bring our body into alignment. Breathing into our left nostril, we're bringing lots of oxygen, lots of air into our right hemisphere. This is our feminine channel, so it opens us up. When we move to the other side, we'll be breathing into our left through our right nostril into our left hemisphere, and that's our masculine side. So we breathe first into our feminine to open ourselves up, and then we breathe into the masculine to basically create the structure. And this is a way of, within a few minutes, just balancing energies in our body. So I'm going to get our timer set up here. So again, you're sitting tall, your eyes are closed, your left hand is in Gyan Mudra or open, your tongue is against the roof of your mouth. Your eyes are focused on the brow point, feeling a bit of a tug. You're going to breathe in at your own pace through your left nostril, holding your right nostril closed. And then exhaling with Om. Om. Now, taking your right hand and putting it face down on your right knee or right thigh. Again, you can put in Gyan Mudra, connecting the index finger and thumb tips together. And with your left hand, you're going to close your left nostril. Again, your eyes are focused on the brow point. Your tongue is pressed against the roof of your mouth. And we'll do the same thing on this side. So breathing in.
Om.
Bring your both hands to your knees or your lap. Keeping your eyes closed, but relaxing the focus on the brow point. Letting your tongue relax. Breathing slow and long and deep. And just feel your body. Maybe your shoulders are sagging or heavy. Maybe you feel your belly soft. Maybe you feel kind of hum in your body. Maybe you hear sounds around you. And then notice yourself noticing these things. As if you were outside of your body and looking at yourself, noticing these things. Allowing your body to feel what it needs to feel without needing to do anything about any of those feelings, whether they're pleasant or unpleasant, an itch you might want to scratch. Just notice it. Notice yourself noticing it. Noticing how your mind has a choice to engage with it or just let it be. So my name is Hans-Peter Meyer, and you've just been listening to or part of a warm-up to tonight's Men's Work conversation, the topic of which is my path to being a man. This is an endless topic. I think it's always changing. Whenever I talk to a man about what it means to him to be a man and how he came to that realization, there's always something new that comes up. And as you listen to this, and if you're a participant here and you decide to offer some of what your own experiences, and I hope you do, remember that there's a difference between feeling what you feel about your own experience, feeling what you feel in response to somebody else's experience, and the stories we tell about it. So our stories are not what we experience. They're what our mind does to try to make sense of things. Sometimes when I talk about the difference between a feminine and a masculine way of understanding the world, I use the metaphor of one is poetic and one is the how-to manual. Or those would be the extremes. But our masculine mind, or that left side of our brain, really is drawn to categorizing and taking things apart and putting them back together as a way of, for lack of a better word, a way of controlling what is beyond our control. So when you're sitting there, and to the extent that you can notice yourself noticing, you're putting yourself into a masculine place, which is not so much interested in categorizing, but is able to just hold that space. And for me, that's the holy grail that I'm seeking as a man. It allows me to do something that is really important to me, and that is to appreciate and experience what's going on around as always nourishing if I can detach from it, if I can just witness it. It's in some ways it sounds really simple. I find it hard. It gets easier for me the more I experience the benefits, which are a kind of an experience of love and of beauty that I couldn't have imagined when I thought that those kind of things were things that I had to pursue or that I had to create instead of allowing them just to come to me. And so the path to getting there, to this place that, you know, always seems a little bit beyond me, is has been one of going through experiencing loss and experiencing heartbreak and also experiencing the limits to what my will can do. So we have in this North American, European, primarily European, North American culture, and heavily influenced by this idea that we can create what we want and that only requires our will. And that it's our job as men to have a purpose and to follow that purpose and to make shit happen, really gets in the way of actually experiencing what's available to us. That's how I see things now. I didn't always. In fact, for most of my life, I believed that I, not only was I quite intelligent and quite creative and quite a remarkable fellow all around, but I could basically have whatever I wanted and create whatever I wanted to create. And I did a lot of that. But the there was at one point a wake-up call for me when I was doing a practice, and in that practice there was email guidance from the teachers, and one of the questions had to do with like, what has your ego brought you? And I started to look at all these things that I always thought, you know, were of my creation. And then I asked myself, well, how important were they? Because most of these things that I thought were really important had actually turned out to be not only not so important, but very damaging for me. And I saw that around me a lot, just, you know, particularly in the world that I had been really successful in, which was a very entrepreneurial world. I just saw all around me people, men particularly, burning their lives and burning their relationships in pursuit of their this entrepreneurial purpose. And it doesn't have to be an entrepreneurial purpose, it can be all kinds of purpose, but I just see lots of us men getting so focused on creating something with our will that all of the beautiful and juicy stuff that's right there next to us, we can't see it and we can't receive it. So a big part of my path these last few years has been to face up to the regret that I feel. You know, it's one of the people who I love when he talks about regret, Stephen Jenkinson. You know, he says people often respond to, well, I don't have any regrets. You know, it's all, I did the best that I could. And then his response is, well, if that's the best we can do, then we're in big trouble. Because the reality is, when I look at my life, I have regrets about things. And the regret is not that I did the best that I could. It's that I chose to not do the best that I could. I chose to do what I wanted to do instead of the thing that was harder, which is to learn to hold space and allow things to come to me. And in some ways, that sounds like a very passive way of being. But I think for anybody who's grown up as a man in this culture, to allow things to come to us, to sit still enough to allow things to come to us, is really hard. And so to do that and to be successful, I laugh because the whole notion of success for me is a problematic one, but for me to actually be able to hold space and receive what's all around me, whether that's the love of a woman, or whether it's the love of my children or my grandchild, or whether it's the loyalty of my dogs, whether it's the warmth of the friends I have around me, my community, my ability to actually be still enough to feel these things and to take them in with some kind of grace really comes down to me practicing. And basically my practice is those things, like the practice that we started this with, that slow me down. I particularly love any kind of practice that has me spending time with opening up my feminine side and then strengthening my masculine capacity to hold myself open. So I like that. That exercise we did, just because it's explicitly about that. And all the teaching that I do with my Yoga for the Sacred Masculine series is all about that, all about creating that structure so that I can hold myself open for that really difficult work of receiving, especially the stuff that doesn't make any sense. And allowing myself to receive it and allowing it to make sense in a way that still doesn't make sense. So it's practice. So if you're listening to this, I encourage you to, if you don't already have a meditative practice, to to start something. And even if it's only for a few minutes, just to slow yourself down and start noticing. And notice when you judge. Notice when you want to protect yourself. Judgment is a protection. Trying to make sense of things is a protection. And it's not bad to protect, but rarely do we actually need that protection. So I say, you know, let's save our protective and defensive skills and strengths for those who really need it. And put myself out on a limb as much as possible and experience all the amazing stuff that's right here that I find so hard to experience. So those are my thoughts tonight. Thanks for listening. I'm going to open it up to whoever is on here tonight if they want to tell their own story about finding their path to being a man, or if you've got questions of me, or whatever. It's open mic time. And if you're listening to this on the podcast and you've got questions or you've got your own story or path to talk about, I'd love to hear about it. Please send me a message. Okay, James, can you unmute yourself?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yep.
So it's just listening, and I'm still on my ongoing journey and finding and creating the time and space to slow down as far as being able to soak in the things that are all around you. I'm in this journey of creating the space for myself to support myself and to not be outwardly seeking a crutch. I think it's interesting that you use the notion of the ego trying to, process or validate things as a form of protection, which I hadn't necessarily had as a perspective before. Trying to make sense of experiences in the sense that it's a form of control, trying to control your environment versus receiving what's already around you. I struggle sometimes mentally being consistent in my practice with my lifestyle, and it's a gradual slowing down where I feel like the consistency will, bring greater rewards, or a sense of balance. And I look to these emails and practices as a stepping stone at some point as my life begins to, slow down. I mean, it's hard. I think one thing that was in one of the previous emails was it's not going to be overnight. It can't be an abrupt change. It needs to be gradual and healthy and have a balance to it. And in my journey to, becoming a man, it's scary to think that, we're alone. I mean, we're not always alone, but the idea, and I don't know if that's a sense of vulnerability, I think it's improper to say that the idea of being able or not being able to feel strength in yourself as a man is less than manly, and trying to embrace the aspects of my vulnerability is something to embrace within my masculine identity. As far as
I'm going to can I interrupt here?
Mm-hmm.
So I absolutely, so let's just again separate man from masculine, feminine from women here. We've all got this masculine and feminine energies are moving in us right now, right? So So you are both, I'm just going to pin you so I can see you better. So you are both in a body that's, that feels masculine, and you're also always experiencing your own feminine. And from what I know about you and the way you express yourself is you've got lots of feminine energy moving in you. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Okay. So it's not good, it's not bad. The good is, if you're aware of that, the bad is when we're not aware of that stuff. So right now, what I want you to do is just close your eyes. And just feel your body. Like, as you just breathe gently, but just, you know, feel your shoulders, feel your chest. You know, see if you can hear, like, what do you hear? Maybe you hear the blood moving in your body, and you can get really, really focused on yourself, and you can hear all kinds of things in your body. You can hear your breath. So everything you can observe that's moving is in this way of looking at things is an expression of feminine energy. And when we get still enough, then we can start. So in the simplest form right now, like, I see you in a room that's fairly monochromatic. You're wearing black clothes. There's not a lot of stimulation in those things, but in your own body, there's blood moving, breath moving, your belly is rising, your belly is falling. But your awareness is stillness. So when you talked about, you know, I can't remember exactly what you said about the being able to take it in from the outside, there's also the taking it in from the inside. So right now, what I'd like you, to the extent that you can feel yourself breathing, feel that breathing, like feel your belly rising, your chest expanding, the breath going through your nostrils. And then notice yourself feeling that. So you just step yourself back a little bit. And then maybe you can even step back a bit further and notice yourself, noticing yourself breathing. So what you're doing right now, to the extent that you can do that, is your consciousness, or this awareness, this masculine energy, really isn't limited by your body or your mind. It's something that, it's quite huge, actually. It's what allows you, if you want to imagine a loved one a long ways away, a child or a parent, a friend, allows you to, wherever you are, to hold them in the same kind of awareness that you're holding yourself right now. We don't often do that. You know, maybe sometimes if you're writing a letter, to the extent that any of us writes letters anymore, and it's different in front of a screen than it is using a pen or a pencil on paper, because in that way we're embodying something in a different way. But that masculine presence can hold and take in the nourishment of the feelings that those people generate in us. So we really are like, you know, when I talk about the need to have our body aligned, our spine and our breath and using things like breath exercise and mantra to subtly adjust our own electrical energies. We really are like that Wi-Fi receiver or radio receiver that's able to send messages but also receive them. And what we experience is that feminine it becomes nourishment when we slow down, when you're able to step outside of yourself like this and just notice yourself feeling, then all of that just becomes a form of nourishment. And it is really simple, but most of us have never been taught that. Something I was going to, somebody mentioned this the other day, that, you know, it is the work of us as fathers, uncles, as, you know, as men who are a little bit older and more experienced than others, to teach those who are younger how to do exactly this, how to become still. So wherever we are on this path towards being the expression of what we might be as men, we can always be teachers and training other men. And that's, I think that's a really important, I know that's really important. I often talk about, and others have talked about, the importance of being in men's groups, and I've certainly benefited from that. But the most important men's relationships that I've had haven't been in men's group. They've been with a man or a couple of men, but always usually it's with a man who has been there to call me on shit and also to show me how to do something. So a mentor. That's probably for me a much more important relationship than men's groups. And this mentor is not somebody who I depend on emotionally or who I do any kind of transference with. It's somebody who helps me to get out of myself. So right now I've just done a little exercise with you to hopefully demonstrate how easy it is to get out of yourself and to tap into the nourishment of the feminine, because it's in you as well as around you. And when we can start doing that for ourselves, then we stop asking anybody else. You talked about being alone. And yeah, we're always alone, and we're always never alone. Like we're always with ourselves, and we're always with whoever we choose to bring into our awareness. So most of the time that doesn't feel like enough, because we still think that somebody else is going to make our life better.
That's fair. I'm exploring the idea. There is a book that was once shared with me called The Untethered Soul, which I am exploring. It's my latest read. And yeah, it makes sense. I thought it was coincidental in the past few days when I was going through the exercises. And I think we discussed previously before me having a issue or a blockage or disconnect in my right shoulder. And you shared with me an exercise with the 60 degree angle that brought up some unresolved emotions or traumas in some ways. And the day that you had sent the email out, one of the spots that you mentioned, I'm at a soccer tournament working in Dallas right now. And I actually that day had a issue or a new issue arise with my left knee. And I didn't know where it came from, but in reading through the daily practices, it was something for me reflect upon. And I actually had a vivid lucid dream last night, and a lot of things I didn't try to, I guess, explain it like you said, or try to put it in any kind of context to try and control the story. I just tried to remove myself from it and soak it in as an experience. And I'm learning to have those things or trying to be open to receive those things in my day-to-day experiences when I make the time for my practice.
Cool. You know, I mean, there are people who go live in caves for decades, and the only teacher they've got is their own body, you know, and they, I mean, that's not for most of us, but our bodies can teach us so much stuff if we give them that kind of space. That's great that you're doing that.
I got to chime in here because it's just brought up a very recent and vivid example of living in our bodies, and when we don't slow down and listen to our bodies, things can happen. I can't show it because I'm wearing a sweater, but a very large scar that goes from my right shoulder down my tricep of my right arm, the back of my arm, to my elbow. And in 2019, I was playing, well, 2018, I started playing dodgeball. And dodgeball in a recreational, let's say, beer league, there's no coaching. You show up, you get with your team, and you just start hucking balls at the other team and play the game. Nobody tells you how to throw. Nobody tells you, gives you any kind of coaching or direction on technique. And I used to say to clients at the salon, after dodgeball matches in the week, because I'd have a bit of a sore arm following dodgeball night, and it was on a Monday night. So the rest of my week after a really vigorous arm workout of throwing dodgeballs, I would say to the clients that two things hurt after dodgeball on Monday nights: my cheeks from laughing and smiling so much, and my arm from throwing. It was getting sore. And like progressively, I have the awareness that it got worse in some ways, but I always shrugged it off as, oh, like a couple of days rest, it'll be fine. The next week I show up, I start throwing. And eventually it got to the point where I was having these really sharp pains when I would throw a certain way. So I tried to throw different ways that wouldn't induce that pain, but I wasn't listening, because at the very first game, at the very end of the game of the new season, that would have been the third season, and this pain started back in the first season. So I went through a season and a half, basically, of knowing that there was pain there, but ignoring it. And the end of the first game, next season back, the third season, I snapped my arm, my own arm, from throwing. I had a spiral break of my humerus, of my right arm. It broke on such an angle that I had to have surgery and have a plate there to hold the bone together. And that was the biggest lesson, what you're just talking about, that I learned was I want to listen to my body more. And when something's happening, to really tune into that, because it's telling you something for a reason. Because after talking with the surgeon, he says most likely what happened because of two things: lack of conditioning and training, and lack of technique. I probably had a spiral or a hairline fracture, and it got worse and worse and worse, and I wasn't letting it rest or not doing the activity anymore. So eventually my body gave out and said, nope, not doing that anymore. My arm broke. So yeah, we got to slow down and listen to our body, especially when there's something feeling there. Now, that has a good reason for it. It's not just from some kind of emotional state entirely. Like, maybe it does have more of a connection there than I can think of in the moment. All I know is I was having fun and I wasn't listening to my body at all. And I paid the ultimate price, because I still have to really tune into that part of my body, because it's not what it was. And I'll never get to forget, because I got a massive scar.
I can think of so many work situations where that same thing happened, like not just to me, but lots of guys, you know, we just, the whole tough it out thing.
Tough it out. Yeah, and, exactly. Suck it up, buttercup.
And sometimes the situations just seem, you know, there seems to be no choices. Like, I had a family to support. I needed to work. I just worked through the pain. And my pain wasn't as bad as some guys, you know, who were, and my, you know, my career in that particular work was, you know, was short. But some guys, they were in there for life, and they were, you know, long-term denying their bodies with all kinds of medications, prescription and otherwise. And then it becomes, whether, like you said, whether it's whether there's an emotional or whatever thing behind it, it becomes its own story, and then it dominates our lives. And trying to change that is hard. So again, I think it's really important, if you know, to have a practice that actually is about slowing down. And you know, the best one I can think of is a meditative practice. You know, and a breath practice is a great meditative practice that very quickly slows me down. It alters my state. It changes how I feel. It changes how I perceive the world. Makes me useless for some things, it seems. But one of the guys who I most admired when I was younger, and I still admire him, was a carpenter who, he was a friend of mine. So occasionally I never worked on a pro job with him, but I'd work, we had family, mutual family stuff. And every time we did something together, I was amazed at how relaxed he was and how slow he worked and how much he got done. Most of our training is around, you know, 24/7, harder, faster. And this guy was the exact opposite. He would just take a long time to figure out the easiest and most efficient way to do something. And then he would execute with what seemed like without effort. And as far as I know, he didn't have a spiritual practice, but I guess the way he lived his life was that way. What was a, could be a spiritual practice.
Work smarter, not harder.
Yeah, and smarter, starting with slow down.
Yeah. That was the same.
It's a struggle that I have with everything. So sorry, James.
No, I was just going to mention there is an old adage from when I was in the military. My sergeant would say, "Slow is smooth, and smooth is fast." That was all.
Slow is smooth, and smooth is fast.
That was all I had.
That was good. That was good.
I didn't mean to cut you off, though, if you wanted to continue.
No, that was, I think we should probably sit with that for a bit. Practice being slow. Practice not having a response. I'm editing my mother's memoirs. I think I've mentioned that before. And it's always, it's just so interesting. to talk to her about this stuff. So right now, lately I've been actually working on it with her. So she sits in the same room and does her thing, and I do the editing, and then I ask questions. And she had this story about my dad. She has a story about my dad. They were separated after 18 years of marriage. And my father had a number of bad habits, but you know, one of the worst habits, I think, was that he had affairs. So my mother has reasons to have some bitterness towards him. But she also has this story about herself being, as she says, she's passive and she didn't assert herself. And I was reading her part of the story today, which had to do with my coming into the world. So I was an immaculate conception. No, I was conceived outside of wedlock. And my mother was, they were living in a small Mennonite community, and my grandmother was very, very strict. And anyway, so the story starts with my mom talking about wanting to have, that they decided to have two children. And then she equivocates and says, well, I know that he wanted to have two children. I probably just let him boss me around. And then a couple paragraphs later, when she tells him that she's pregnant, and his first response is, well, let's get rid of it, like have an abortion. And she just puts her foot down and says, no, thank God, that's me. No, and he went along with that. And I said, Mom, you know, it's obvious that when you needed to be assertive, you were able to do that. I said, you know, what I see in my way of looking at this is that in your life, you were a very feminine identified woman who was really attracted to my father, who was a very masculine identified man. He was had a lot of direction and a lot of focus. And, you know, he knew what he wanted, and that was very attractive to her. And it gave her a lot of space just to relax and not make decisions and be really good at what she was good at, making our home, raising children. And I said, you know, this has nothing, you know, the failure of your marriage has nothing to do with you being assertive or not. It has, from my perspective, it has to do with my father never actually becoming the man that you needed him to be, that he always remained a teenager emotionally. And so from this way of looking at things that I have, he was never able to hold space for his own feminine feelings. So he just acted on them. When he was attracted to women, he just acted on that rather than feeling it, acknowledging it, and then being able to hold that and go, okay, I can feel those things, I can acknowledge those things, and I don't have to act on them. In fact, I have a responsibility to my family to create a bigger space here. So as I said, editing my mom's memoirs is just this constant learning and interesting conversations and reflections about not only her journey, but like what I learned and how I learned to be a man. And a lot of that had to, you know, was in reaction to what I saw my father doing, and I didn't have any models to do anything different. But I think one of the big things is that if we can slow down enough, and if we can, that was what I was trying to do with you, James, is just show you how just in a really easy way, you can quickly create that space and hold your own and nourish yourself from your own feminine. And then also use that to connect to something bigger around you without having to make a lot of effort. Like I think it's great to make lots of effort and to you know, commit to big processes and practices and stuff. But I think we have to remember that some of the stuff is actually pretty simple. It's just hard to be consistent with it. And even if you only take 5 minutes a day to slow down and breathe and feel your own impulses and your own wants and your own yearnings, and just to hold them and not have to act on them, then you're making progress. Then you're moving closer to who you really are. Again, I think it's pretty simple. It's just hard to take that little simple thing seriously and to be consistent about it. And yeah, it starts with, you know, like a good place to start is, well, where am I uncomfortable in my life? So if it's throwing the ball the wrong way, then that's a great place. If it's feeling like you're in the wrong profession, or if your relationship is feeling awkward, then these are really good places to bring our awareness and just start there. Because, you know, I think you're your own best teacher. You're not gonna, it doesn't matter who tells you what to do. You still have to integrate into your own life and into your own experience. So start there. So we're almost at the top of the hour. There's space for each of you to say something, ask something, say something, shout something.
I got a question for you about your mom's memoirs. Was she encouraged to write them, or did she just do that on her own?
She started a few years ago. I think she started before she moved back here, so that might have been even 10 years ago. I think it was something she wanted to do. I think it was something that came from her. I certainly would have been like, yeah, go for it, because I love that kind of stuff. But
yeah, I think that's amazing.
Came from her.
Yeah. I think we can learn so much from those stories of our elders, and especially those family members, to get to know more of their perspectives of the past. And unless you sit and have those conversations, where else do you get that from? Unless they write it down.
Yeah. I used to interview my my first mother-in-law, who she and I got along really well, and I would actually sit down with her. We'd go out to lunch and buy a bottle of wine, and then I'd put the tape, you know, put the iPhone down or whatever, and I'd ask her questions about her life. So I, because she was fascinating, but I like doing that with pretty much anybody, but it certainly gave me a lot of insight into my, you know, who my wife was, because all those things shaped her. But I think it's something that we can ask any of our elders around us. And, you know, with my father, he was full of stories, but they were evasive stories. They were funny stories. You know, he grew up, he was born just before the Second World War in Germany. His father, at the end of the war, there was, you know, starvation, and everybody was poor. And my grandfather was a drunk, and there were all kinds of bad things. And so his stories would be humorous. And whenever I would push him on stuff, or I actually asked him to write about some of the stuff, and he said he couldn't write a page without, it just became too painful. So to go back to your comment earlier, James, about, you know, this, like, this thing that we experience as men as a dichotomy of its strength or vulnerability. And I guess what I come back to is, you know, we do some of these practices so that we have the strength to be vulnerable, so that I can stand here with my heart open and be strong and know that I'm strong enough, that I'm deep enough, that doesn't matter what somebody says. I mean, if somebody comes at me with a knife or something like that, that's different. But what you say or what she says, I might not like it, but it can't really hurt me. And I think that's the big lesson here is, you know, we've gone through this thing of like, well, we don't want to be tough like our dads or our grandfathers or whoever was in the past or who was basically denying everything. We don't want to be like that. And so many of us have, and myself included, have just kind of gone like, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to feel everything and be, you know, warm and fuzzy and stuff. And that's great. But it's not safe for the feminine around us. Because if I'm going to be as flowy and feely as she is, then she can't be in that space herself because I'm not trustworthy there. Because I'm actually built to attack, and my defensive impulses are too strong for anybody to trust me to be in my emotions all the time. So I need to learn how to be vulnerable, to feel stuff, but also hold myself so that I can feel the stuff, I can cry, and I can be responsible for keeping myself grounded. And that's the hard part of the work. But I, you know, and I would say that's where my father let all of us down. I mean, you know, he was somebody who felt a lot of things and expressed a lot of things, but he didn't know how to do that in a safe way. So he was really vulnerable, but he was also attacking at the same time. And I think our work is to feel stuff and then hold ourselves and not protect ourselves as a shield, but just, okay, I can hold my own feelings. I can feel them. And nobody else is responsible for what happens with them. It's up to me. And I can do this safely. And then, yeah, I think the company of other men is probably really, really important for that. But it's not an either or. I think it's actually, it's when we level up. So we become strong enough that we can actually hold ourselves and stable enough that we can hold ourselves. And then we can be vulnerable. And we're not, even though we have this fear of being hurt by words or how things feel, we also have this confidence that it's not going to be our undoing.
Well, I'm glad your parents made it through and that you're here to join us today. I think that's, you know, and granted the times and circumstances were different, but that's one thing, you know, as someone, I have a lot of feelings. I feel a lot of things as far as, energetic exchanges, especially, I guess, if I can see myself in someone's eyes or a reflection of myself and some type of connection there with the idea of, you know, marriage and, you know, I guess an authentic relationship that withstands the test of time or transcends time. For someone who I'd say, I wouldn't say serial monogamous, but I mean, when I commit, you know, and I'm a generally, you know, I think one of the things in a previous email was all my eggs in one basket, you know, in this one basket, and committing to that. And in my relationships, and I'm currently, I guess you could say I'm in a relationship right now. I have been for the better part of a year now, which was, truth be told, I mean, kind of just reaching out to fill, I guess, a gap or a void within myself, which through these practices we've been doing, and, you know, the emails and the guidance I've been fortunate enough to receive in working and participating in these events, reaffirms this idea of it's not your partner's job to fix you. You know, that's my work as a man. I need to fix, you know, myself. I think the idea of being in, you know, a relationship, if it's going to be authentic, you know, two things. One, you know, with my previous partners, I want to grow with you, you know, not grow apart. The idea is, and that was an old inspiration, together we rise. It's not her job to fix me. It's, you know, ideally that we are by each other's side while we're fixing ourselves. And that's something I've tried to, I guess, get back in touch with. And I think it was in the last session that we did in consciously creating relationships and recognizing areas for self-improvement and self-growth and not wanting a partner, or I guess the woman not wanting to feel like a mother in the relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's an area of my life right now, which for my choice of career and the things that invigorate and enliven me, which for me is a career in soccer officiating. And one day I will build my in-home recording studio that I can share with the world. That will be my place to express myself and also in my own way, be my way to take what I feel I can give to other people and build a lifestyle around that, to where there's a reciprocation of energy, you know, where everybody's gaining and nobody's taking, and it's a safe space. But, you know, I'm in this relationship now that where I've consciously made a decision to create distance. And the reason, and at this point, you know, when my lease is up in June, this woman that I've been seeing is moving to another state. I'm moving into my own space where, you know, I don't have to worry about, you know, if someone's gonna, I guess, resonate with my attempts to slow down. You know, it's hard to be in an environment that doesn't help me thrive. Mm-hmm. And it's also no one else's job to facilitate that. It's my job to create that space and to make an effort to create that space. So it's been enlightening, you know, being a part of these workshops to, like you said, being able to slow down. You know, I think that's in the first two chapters of The Untethered Soul. You know, who's the voice in your head? You know, who's the one that's got that dialogue going on, and can you step out from it? I've been doing that, but in a more, I guess, literal sense, in that, you know, it's been great to be able to slow down, but that's something I'm trying to integrate and make a more regular practice, as opposed to just taking this logical, you know, I can solve the problem, I can get it done. Because in the times that I have been isolated, I think I've taken two trips to Alaska in the past probably 5 or 6 months, and it is when I'm by myself and I am not, you know, in not I guess the best environment, but in my solitude is where I've been able to make the deepest connections with myself and things beyond myself that bring me to a place of peace where I can move. I think that's one of the best things, or that I enjoy the most at the end of these, you know, these letters that we get in the apprenticeship to love, is at the end of it, it's, you know, take a breath, you know, open your eyes and bring that calmness with you through your day. And when I came back, you know, to the craziness of Fairfield, Iowa, and I was able to step, I guess, having had that time alone and being able to connect with myself and things beyond myself, it was only after being able to step out, kind of like in that breathing exercise, and look at it from the outside, that I realized the areas that I really, you know, need to work on for myself, so I can show up for myself, so I can show up for somebody else. And it's not going to be an overnight process. And that was another thing in the email, you know, it's got to be healthy. It can't be like some severance where, you know, you're just chopping off some, you know, limb of yourself to try and fill some void, and then you'll be metaphorically, you know, bleeding out, you know, but it's doing it slowly and healthily. And I think it was a great analogy to, and I guess coincidental, synchronistic, that it was spring and mud. And when that came out, I was doing some random, when you sent that, I by chance circumstance was doing a bunch of drywall mudding I had never done before, but it was nice to just be able to, you know, take your time, slow things down. So yeah, it's been a very positive experience that's helping me create space. And it's frightening to have no bearing on, I guess, purpose or direction, you know, to be a purpose-driven man. But it's when I've taken the time to slow down that all of these doors have started opening up for me within my professional career. Mm-hmm. And now giving me more opportunities to focus on other areas. And one of the big ones is being a man and a father. That's been a big disconnect with some past relationship trauma. But slowing down has been a good way to help find a balance and a bearing, even though there's no bearing.
Well, there's always a bearing, and that's us and our breath, right? So it's everything's always moving, but we're always somewhere. So good for you. Thanks, guys.